Brooklyn Expedition, October 5th, 13, 10:31.
What?
11:30 maybe? It's 11:27.
Well, 11:30 would be good. Oh, weekend slip C. Slip C?
Yeah, but maybe it's down further.
Oh, weekends, 11:50, yeah.
Maybe it's down further.
What time is it? All right, we got a few minutes. We're going to... Slip C?
Take a helicopter.
Oh, nice. The heliport. Yeah, Eddie and Jelen did... they went there to do the helicopter tour when they were here in New York. Slip C.
Must be right over here.
Look, a helicopter. Slip C.
Here it is.
This could be it. Yeah. The helicopter is landing.
So that's like about $300-$400?
Yeah, it's like, it's a lot. A heck of a lot. Oh, let's go out here. There's a cool thing at the end here. It's a good place to wait. Thank you. Here's my Dumbo ticket. It actually says Dumbo on it.
Yeah, go Dumbo.
We're going to Dumbo. In fact, whoa. There's a lot of little tents set up. There must be some sort of event there in the... That's where we're going to go. We're going to go to Brooklyn Bridge Park, and then we're going to go to Dumbo.
Oh, we're
going to
be along the Watchtower.
Yeah, exactly. And then we're going to head into Brooklyn.
Yeah, a couple months ago, I was with a couple friends. We went to a famous pizzeria right under the bridge there.
Oh, yeah?
Can't remember the name now, but it was... and then we walked back over.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, walking over the bridge, but that's just such a long walk,
yeah,
right?
No,
it was like an hour?
Yeah, it took a long time. And in the middle of the walk, it started downpouring.
Oh, really? There's no shelter on the bridge. So here's, like, art. Wow. It's like a public... it's like a circular opening in the pier here, and there's a railing, and there's just water. And you look down in the water, it's sort of soothing.
This reminds me of Pearl Harbor.
Yeah?
For some reason, the monument.
Oh, really?
Because, like, you stand there, and, like, you could actually see the pieces of the boat.
Oh, like the sunken ships and stuff?
The only difference is there's, like, flowers. Everybody throws flowers in the water there.
And if you look up, there's like these weird circular metal discs that have people's faces in them.
Oh, wow.
I don't know who those people are. They're like
people who
historical characters. That looks like Paul McCartney right there. Huh? Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, you know. Of course, this is the time of the surveillance society, and you're being watched all the time. I wonder, could that be our boat? No, it's not the boat.
That Governor's Island.
Yeah, there it is.
Right over there.
It may be open today, but this is not a Governor's Island day.
No.
This is Brooklyn. We've already been recording for about an hour and a half, and we're not in Brooklyn yet, but...
Wow.
No, it's not been that long. And remember, we got to get a picture together, all three of us.
Yeah. Cloud Base 44, coming down, September 16th, 13, 15:24.
Gary, my cousin, and... went out for a walk with dog, and yeah, I don't know, it just turned out a really long day because it was up since 2 or 3 in the morning. And oh yeah, you're not there, happy, over here. And I was just absolutely wrecked, you know. In there if you want, happy, in there. No, if you don't like, over here then, over here. And I just got really tired, so I went for a nap for like an hour yesterday. And now, 1 second, hold on. Dogs must be kept on the lead, of course. So anyway, so this is the next day, and we didn't do a hell of a lot, but it just seemed like a really long day. Just like, I brought the dog for a walk, connected to my wife from work, and I visited a grave for Gary, my dad's grave. And what else did we do? Not much. He wanted to watch Hollow Man, so we watched that on Netflix. It just felt like a really long day, and Then I don't know. I think I pretty much slept okay last night, but then I felt like I had to wake up too early. And I came back and I just kind of slept, and then I woke up, had breakfast, I slept again, woke up for a little bit, and then I just slept. I just like slept all day. It was great. I just haven't slept that much. Probably in years. It's probably because I'm taking all this modafinil and all, which, by the way, is no use to me anymore. I'm not going to be taking it anymore. I've tested it now, and doesn't do what I thought it would do, which is bring me the focus I need. And I think you'd be okay, happy without the lead. What do you think, huh? Just for a moment, huh? Oh. Ah, you'll be fine. You need a bit of a run here. Hold on.
Hold on, hold on. Sit. Lay down. Let me just sort this out for you. You'll be able to run around there. Go for your run. Off you go.
So, I just happened to be in a different park here. And I had a recording. Recording should be okay here, but it's just I have the Mophie thing on. I put a little plastic thing in between it. It seems to be connecting now a little bit better. I shouldn't have to do that, of course, but otherwise I'd get my receipt and send it back. And oh shit, I don't know. It probably weighs like, I don't know, a tenth of a gram maybe, or whatever the hell. Maybe, I don't know. What is a gram? Maybe half. Maybe it does weigh a gram, maybe. I don't know. Half a gram. So my cold is pretty much gone as well. So there's a few small remnants left. But I better not go over there happy they're playing a game.
Bug out, Lagoon, October 24th, 12th, 17, 18th.
Colorful flowers as violas, pansies, snapdragons, calendulas, Iceland poppies, and column stocks. And here's how to get these 1945 season seeds. Just buy a jar of Planters point-free peanut butter. Then mail label with 25 cents, label and a quarter, to Planters Peanuts, care of this station.
The weather woman sounded very friendly tonight. She said cloudy and mild, about 45 degrees tomorrow, Sunday fair. Just now, the temperature is 44 degrees. A summary of the day's top news: the Canadian First Army gained 5 miles in its offensive toward the Ruhr, and all Allied armies are on the move. No change in the battle before Berlin, but the Germans say the Russians have opened a new offensive against Breslau.
Don Hollenbeck brings you the day's news every weekday night at this time, presented Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays by Planters Peanuts.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Did you hear that? 15 minutes. There were no celebrity gossips. There was nobody having a drugged out breakdown. There was actual news and information. There really wasn't too much of a slant, even like propagandist. I mean, and the most abstruse thing that they even mentioned was a ban on conventions, which I had never heard of. I guess this late in the war, there was enough of a shortage of fuels and materials that they felt people dragging around to go to, you know, a Masonic convention might be a little excessive. I mean, you have to remember, there was all kinds of rationing going on during World War II. All your food, your meat, your gas, they were making no new cars. They were making no new tires, I believe, at this point. You have to be really careful what resources you were using, even. And like I said, that was just a really good example of what news was at the time. There was no fluff there. They were telling you what was going on in that big war, which I guess was what was important. I mean, I guess there were other programs that were designed to entertain you. Here is 15 minutes of news, I guess was how they were looking at it. Anyhow, yeah, we've got that toy piano band, Music Twink. And we've got that wacky music that lets you know you're either on your way in or out, this time out of the bug out zone. We will do it again sooner than later, perhaps even tomorrow, barring any interruptions in the time space continuum, with more popular cultural diatribe from yours truly, P.K. River. And until then, I am so thankful that you've been listening, and their words cannot express. Be seeing you.
New Midnight Cassette 02, Neo Rap, 2012, 05/30. The Overnightscape 1003, Subductive 8, September 6, 13, 03/48.
Take that over to Times Square. Then I had to walk through the corridor of losers, that long walk into the bus terminal. You know, I got something to drink and a little bit of food at the Duane Reade. Went up all the levels, had to wait for the bus. Luckily, I found a place to... I sat down. I was like, I'm drunk. Wait for the bus to come. Then one bus came, but it wasn't my bus. And another bus came. Oh, my God. Then sitting on the bus, and it was, of course, I'm just like, I just want to go home. I just want to just go to bed. I'm so, And of course, even though this is the 10:30 p.m. bus, of course we hit a massive traffic jam. I'm like, oh, come on. And I started feeling a little queasy at that point. I'm like, are you serious? I just want to go home. Please. The massive traffic. I think it was construction. You know, they did do the nighttime construction. So here's the thing. All during the daytime and then rush hours, of course, the traffic jams are horrible. And then at night, where there might be some relief from all this traffic, they start this mass construction, shut down half the lanes, only one lane left, and there's mass traffic. So there's like 24-hour traffic jams around here. That's basically the concept. Oh, my God. It was interminable. It just kept going and going, this bus ride. And finally, I got home. And, you know, stumbled off the bus and walked home. I mean, obviously, if I was drunker than that. The last time it happened, I kind of passed out on the bus and missed my bus stop. But this time, I guess I wasn't that drunk. But I get home and I'm like, hi, honey, I said to my wife. And I just didn't go to the bathroom. I didn't get ready for bed or anything. I just went into the bedroom, took my clothes off, went into bed and passed out, basically. Completely. So, and then, but, and in the morning, I was, yesterday, in the morning, I woke up, I was, it was not really that bad of a hangover. It was a slight hangover. Like, all day yesterday, I felt kind of a little bit off. I think my eyes were a little bloodshot, but it wasn't terrible. I've only had, like, an ultra horrible hangover once or twice in my life, because I'm not a big drinker. It wasn't too bad. I still feel a little out of it right now. I'm not used to it. What's going on here? Talk about construction zones. Times Square is one big construction zone right now. They're reconstructing the street or something. I don't even know what the hell they're doing. Why they have to... Like, what is Times Square? It's like a street. Why do they have to keep, like, demolishing it and rebuilding it? And then in the end, it's just a street again. I think it's maybe, like, the tunnels underneath it or the steam pipes or... I don't know. Why is it... All this mass construction constantly. I don't know. Anyway, what do we have here? Even here on 42nd, they're digging up the street. It's a good question. Good question indeed.
The arcade game auction, March 16th, 02. 14:50 seconds.
$15. Well, $15 number. 228. Got a bunch of slot machine parts and these three bowling balls. Combined it all. One money. $1 to go. And two. Hit down to be able to go two. Hit down to be able to get two, three. Hit two, three, 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 three. Hit two, able to get $3. $3. Pac-Man parts. Looks like the glass, the header, and the playboard for Pac-Man. Lot number 483. You got $10 to start. And 15. And 10 gonna go 15. 20. And 15 gonna get 20. And 15 gonna get 20. Gonna get 20. 20. 20 gonna get 20. And 20 and 5. And 20 gonna get 5. And 20 gonna go 5. Gonna get 5. Gonna get 25. And 20 gonna get $25. $25. $20 number 128. Cards from Sega, from Bullseye. Okay, you're buying all three boxes, one money, got $1 to go. And two. It's out of it, we go two, three. That came in to get $3. You're buying this horse's antique gumball slot, okay? Come take a look at it. A nice piece, guys. Got $50 to start. $450 to go, $2, $2 down $50, $2 $471, $472, $473, $474, $475, and $476. You can buy one or all of them times the money. Wait a minute. Tell you what, let's keep these two separate. So we're selling you $470 through $474. One or all the boxes times the money of 45 records and title strips, okay? So you buy one or all five times the money, get $5 to start.
And Dan, hit $5, we'll do $10. average. Hit 5 is $10. Hit 5 takes 7.5. Hit 5 for you, 7.5, $10. 10, 12.5. Hit 10 for you, 12, 15. 12.5, 15. Hit 17.5. At 15, 17.5, 20. At 79, we're going to get 20, we're going to get 20, we're going to get 20. At 79, we're going to get $20, $20, 1750 number. 230, you want a ball, sir?
Yes.
Take them all. Okay, guys, you got two boxes of compact discs.
All right.
You better buy the box. 475 and 476. One of both boxes of compact discs. Save the money. Got $5 to go.
And 10. And 5, I'm going to go 10, 15. And 10, I'm going to give $15. And 10, I'm going to go 15, I'm going to give 15.
The Rambler number 260, April 7th, 09, 11.6, 19/26.
So I think a lot about that. This album was unbelievably great, and I listened to it a lot. The whole album is good. Then, their follow-up album was called Afterburner, where they were trying to do more of the same, apparently. And Afterburner, by the way, we're outside here now. Afterburner is not good. It's like, it's nothing on it is good. I mean, it's like, some songs are okay, I guess, but it completely does not capture the quality of Eliminator. Hey, let me get a news here. Yeah, a second. So, my question is, what is it that gives Eliminator such quality that songs are so good, and yet Afterburner, the album they released right afterwards, just isn't good? If you listen to it on the surface, it's the same sounds, it's guitar noises, it's singing, and you know what I mean? But when you put it all together, it's almost like a song or any creative act by a human being opens a window to what's behind all this, or creates a filter in reality, and you can see something that has a certain quality that is good. You know, and I know, and again, I always mention this, there's a whole book about this, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I'm starting to get sucked into this question of quality myself. I don't want to, like, you know, go insane. Like, the guy in the book, I think, went insane. Or he was already insane or something. But for us to try to understand what is it in those sounds, right? You take a song like, I don't know what the best song of the album is, I guess. Sharp Dressed Man, maybe. You know, all those songs are great. Legs, Give Me All Your Love. I mean, it's like, what is it about those sounds that are so amazing? And then these other sounds on Afterburner, which are so similar, yet they're not good. You know what I mean? That is a real question. And then, of course, Rush, the same thing. I was listening to what I think is one of their best songs, The Weapon. Again, it was probably around the same time period, like the early 80s. Rush song, The Weapon. He's not afraid of your judgment. He knows of horrors worse than your hell. He's a little bit afraid of dying, but he's a lot more afraid of your lying. And all the synthesizer noises, oh my God, the best. Then you come to more, some of the more recent stuff, and it's unlistenable. What is it about quality? It's definitely, strange question. But there's something, you know, we have to think about something here, that we, this idea from, I guess it's from Christianity, that we are made in the image of God, right? That we are these little gods. That's what's so interesting about this. It's like, you might imagine there is some, there are gods out there, you know, powerful beings who can create things. We are little gods. We're like miniature versions of a god. We're very limited, yet we're the same thing. So we have a creative power. We can tap into it.
Sneaky TT Epic, August 2015, 1363/1513. The Midnight Citizen 254, J. Cruz, September 4th, 23, 32, 30 seconds. U.S., Night Project, Farm Safety, August 22nd, 15, 14, 27.
And publish what they call the formula of a planet that is interacting with 1,000 other bodies. They explain it will be one of our most lasting impressions of astronomers. They explain and explain and explain. The astronomers explain that, though in finer terms the mutual effects of three planets cannot be determined, so dominant is the power of the sun that the other effects are negligible. Before the discovery of Uranus, there was no way by which the miracles of the astromagicians could be tested. They said that their formulas worked out, and external inquiry was panic-stricken at the mention of a formula. But Uranus was discovered, and the magicians were called upon to calculate his path. They did calculate, and if Uranus had moved in a regular path, I do not mean to say that astronomers or college boys have no mathematics by which to determine anything so simple. They computed the orbit of Uranus. He went somewhere else. They explained. They computed some more. They went on explaining and computing year in and year out, but the planet Uranus kept on going somewhere else. Then they conceived of a powerful, perturbing force beyond Uranus. So then that at the distance of Uranus, the sun is not so dominant, in which case the effects of Saturn upon Uranus and Uranus upon Saturn are not so negligible, on through complexes of interactions that infinitely intensify by cumulativeness into a black outlook for the whole brilliant system. The paleoastronomers calculated and for more than 50 years pointed variously at the sky. Finally, two of them, of course agreeing upon the general background of Uranus, pointed within distances that are conventionally supposed to have been about 600 millions of miles of Neptune, and now it is religiously, if not insolently, said that the discovery of Neptune was not accidental. That the test of that which is not accidental is the ability to do it again. That it is within power of anybody who does not know a hyperbola from a cosine to find out whether the astronomers are led by a cloud of rubbish by day and a pillar of bosh by night. If, by the magic of his mathematics, any astronomer could have pointed to the position of Neptune, let him point to the planet past Neptune, according to the reasoning by which a planet past Uranus was supposed to be, a trans-Neptunian planet may be supposed to be. Neptune shows perturbations similar to those of Uranus. According to Professor Todd, there is such a planet, and it revolves around the sun once in 375 years. There are two, according to Professor Forbes, one revolving once in 1,000 years, the other once in 5,000 years. See McPherson's A Century's Progress in...
Big Appreciation Showcase Number 2, June 22nd, 23, 68 75ths.
I get paid, and I let the money sit in the account for the whole month doing nothing. And you put it on the credit card, and at the end of the month I pay it off in full. Is this what people who've turned 30 talk about? Good grief. This is the first episode since turning 30, and I feel old, even just at these topics and stuff. Oh dear. What have I become? But so I'd got this credit card, and I had never used it before. And then one evening I needed to go, I think I was coming back from the data center all the way back up to Hornsby, And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning. It's not that far off that now, actually. And I thought, yeah, public transport's not available. Don't want to wake up any of my friends to sort of ask for a lift. And even if I was going to, Mascot to Hornsby, because Mascot's where the data centres are, that's quite the trip. I'm not going to subject anyone to that. So I got a cab. Got a taxi. And I put it on the credit card so that it would be easy enough for me to expense afterwards, so you can get a receipt and stuff. And so it was about 4 in the morning by the time I got home. And so alarm bells didn't ring when he swiped my card and then said that the card didn't work and that he was going to have to swipe it in a different machine. And so he, excuse me, sorry, no, he didn't swipe it, he put, because it's a chip thing, so he put the card chip first into this machine and then did it again because that machine was broken. Now, normally in my sort of lucid state, I would have said, it's not working. That's a bit, it's pretty obvious that he just copied the card right in front of my face. And he figured that maybe I just looked really stoned. I've been pretty tired lately, but those 4 a.m. data center trips were really brutal, particularly after you've been doing them for a few days at a time. So maybe he figured that I looked stoned or something and that he'd be able to get away with taking my card. And so he did. And sure enough, within 24 hours, got a call from the credit card company, from Bank West, saying, oh yes, your card has been used to make a series of withdrawals from places that you don't normally frequent. And sure enough, there were ones in transactions being done in suburbs. Well, in fact, it was worse than that. It wasn't just suburbs I'd never been to before, but they'd done one in a suburb, and then a suburb 5 minutes later in a place that was 100 k's away. Like, even if you had a private jet, you could not have got between those two ATMs in time. So, presumably, I guess what...
The Overnightscape 1231. Maybe I will. November 7th, 15, 27, 31st.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Disneyland has now concluded its normal operating day.
Yeah, folks, and me and my pals hope you had a swell time.
It's that time.
What time is that, Minnie?
Goofy?
What? Now it's time to say goodnight to all our company.
Rupnert Show 215, The Economics Behind Computing Episode, February 19th, 07, 2/4.
A few cents or a few pence or something extra to produce. And it's a very interesting question, and it's all about price targeting, which essentially means you force your consumers, you basically split up your consumers into who can afford what, and you squeeze out every penny that you can out of them. So in a way, I guess it's, and this was the example that my university lecturer gave. Imagine it in a way where if you're a producer of something and you have one price, say you produce a cup of coffee and you have a blanket price of $3. Well, obviously for some people, $3 is way too expensive. Probably they make $3 a month in wages, for example, if you live in a really poor country, versus $3 for a really rich person who is in a hurry at a subway shop, in a subway station early in the morning somewhere. And really, they would pay $10. They're so desperate to get a cup of coffee. So obviously they're not it's not a very efficient system because they're losing a whole segment of the market, but they're also, they're losing a whole segment in, I hope I'm making sense here. They've lost a whole segment of the market because people can't afford it, but they're also losing a segment of the market who could be paying a lot more. So in a way, they've lost on both counts. So in a way, this is exactly what Microsoft appears to be doing with Windows. And it's not going to work, or at least most people I know say that it's not going to work, and there's an explicit difference. So essentially, you think about Windows 98, there was one version of Windows 98, don't count second edition and all that rubbish, but you had Windows 98 or Windows 98, and the idea being that everyone would have the same version, be much easier. But with Windows Vista, for example, you've got Vista Starter, Home Basic, Home Premium, Business, Enterprise, and Ultimate. And granted, you can't buy some versions in some countries, and some of them you need to get through volume licensing or some rubbish like that. But essentially, you've got six versions of Windows Vista: the Starter, Basic, Premium, Business, Enterprise, and Ultimate. And this is an example of what they say, an example of bad price targeting. Because really, think about it, if you think about what you use your computer for, and for most of us, and even I would admit to this, for the most part, I use a web browser. I do a bit of programming, but it's just text-based stuff, audio recording, and email. That's essentially, for most people, it's web browsing, email, maybe some Word, YouTube or something. That's the extent of their usage of their computer. But it's a very clever method of price targeting. If you were to actually drill down what you use your computer for, you could probably get away with using the Home Basic version of Vista, which is the second lowest level one. We won't count Starter because that's a ridiculous thing. It's going to fail because they're going to be using pirated versions anyway. So I won't get into that. But you could get away with using Home Basic. But the argument that Tim Harford was saying in The Undercover Economist is that people have this inherent disposition to think they're worth more. And that's why if you see a packaging for something, if you see, for example, Woolworths in Australia, they had asparagus in cans, and you've got the no fruit.
The Overnightscape 1310, Talk Jape, August 9th, 16, 37:58.
Weather, like, just deal with all of the potential issues, right? You need a very, very strong, you know, AI system for that. Anyway. And then, even as Randy mentioned, in an even larger sense, AI taking over professional jobs. For anything that a person is doing now that involves a customer support or interpretation of data, so many white-collar workers, AI, again, without even needing any physical function, will be able to take over those tasks. And it will happen very fast. Once the learning systems, basically they're setting up AI to learn how to do things, right? Once you have that learning system in place, which apparently is we're getting very close to, for example, I talk about this a lot, the board game Go, very popular in Japan and China. People thought that a computer could not beat a human master in Go for another 20 years. It just happened earlier this year that a computer can now destroy any human player in Go. Computers have been able to destroy people in chess for many years now. No one can beat a computer in chess anymore using the top-level computer chess, Deep Blue or whatever it was. You can't win. You can never beat a computer. Just like you can't beat a computer at tic-tac-toe. That's easy to see why. But so the reason that the Go worked is because they just taught a computer the rules and had it play billions and billions of games against itself, and it started learning how to win. No one even programmed it. It just started learning. And there was a cover story at last issue of Wired Magazine about how you don't need to program computers anymore. You just teach them how to do things. Right? That's coming. So, as Randy said, what happens? Now, in my utopian model, we all share in the wealth. The robots are doing everything. So we humans can now decide how we want to spend our free time. All equal, all... You can have everything that you want and more. But within reason, you want to say what makes people happy. I would think what makes people happy is having challenging and rewarding projects and tasks to work on, socialization, friends, family, art, creativity, those kinds of things. Amassing wealth and having a giant house and a watch that costs $600,000, these things don't make you happy, you know. So you might say, oh, well, if we have this new society, everyone's going to have a mansion. Well, do you really fucking want a mansion? You know, do you really want a giant house like that? I mean, why? You know? It might be to the point where it's like us that you might say, listen, if you particularly feel like you want to live in a giant house, go nuts. Have a giant house. The robots will build it for you. If you really want that, you can have it. But most people, I think, will opt for, something more.
The Overnightscape 1353, A Cartoon Owl Child Rocks, January 6th, 1734.
The human spirit is not measured by the size of the act, but by the size of the heart. What? Okay. Okay, back to work. Finally leaving work. Yeah, it's been a long day. It's like 7:30. I finally leave. It's not a common thing for me to stay late, but other people stay late like every night, so I'm not complaining. Sometimes you gotta stay late at work. I mean, I'm on a salary. I don't get any overtime when I stay late. See, that's how it works. You get a job, and you get overtime. We should go over and take a look at this Coffee Mania. I want to see what's going on over there. So I went to right next to Coffee Mania and Barilla. I went to I mentioned Barilla, right? Didn't I? Yeah, I think so. I went to Kinokuniya, the Japanese bookstore. It's so great that I have a Japanese bookstore and a Japanese grocery right by where I work. I had to get some office supplies for myself. You could theoretically get office supplies at work, but it's not like other places. Like, every other place I work, there's like a supply closet. I need a pad. I need a pen. You just go and grab it. Here, you have to there's like some like cryptic website you have to find to order like a pen. I never figured out where that site was or whatever, but I don't have to do too much stuff. I bought a notebook at the Japanese bookstore that was really good, because when you go to a meeting, it's good if you bring a notebook and a pen and it looks like you're going to take notes, even though a lot of times there's really nothing to write down. But this Nemo sign is the name of it. It's a Japanese Nemo sign. Really good notebook. It's like grid, a graph paper kind of deal, and it's really easy to open it up. It's like spiral bound. It's just really good. So I ran out. After a year and a half at work, I ran out of my first Nemo sign. So I bought another one of those, and I figured I'd get a fun new pen. I got one of these Jetstream pens. It's like a super ultra-charged ballpoint pen. It's not a gel pen, apparently. It's a ballpoint pen, but it's very advanced Jetstream technology. That was cool. And then I actually found some circular wooden magnets, because my only form of self-expression at work is to put little circular magnets on the side of my cubicle. Because other forms of expression are forbidden. You're not allowed to put like little action figures and stuff all around. They want to keep a very clean looking office. So I figure these could.
The Meanderer 46, after and before, June 23rd, 16, 157/208. Tapeland 124, The Overnightscape 18th Anniversary Special, March 13th, 21, 048/102.
or kind of as a like a TV show. It was I found it very entertaining. They even had Gulf War. Remember Gulf War One from '91? The trading cards, the Gulf War trading cards with the General Schwarzkopf and everything. That was wild. It was. I found it very entertaining. This Gulf War Two is totally different. I mean, in a sense, being able to see everything firsthand and be have such immediacy almost takes a little bit of the mystery out of it. I know in the original Gulf War there was not a lot of direct footage. It was about the briefings, and this was a much more longer, drawn out thing. Where what was it? Something like 39 days, and it was this thing that just went on and on. And you had the briefings with Schwarzkopf and Pete Williams and Colin Powell, and they had the footage from the SLAM missiles, and like, here's a SLAM missile, so we're going to show you the footage of it going directly into the. Flying into this building. And well, of course, 1991 was a much different time also. It was a different age, it was a different time. And like I said, I was a slacker. I was pretty much unemployed during the entire 1991. Now, how old was I then? Let's see, it was 8, 9, 10. I was 23, for turned 24 in October. So it's kind of the classic slacker, directionless. And I remember my lowest point was I used to just go and drive around, I guess in one of my parents' cars, and just go to toy stores and, you know, go to malls and just walk around and get coffee. I remember at one point I was down in Somerville, New Jersey, and I went to the Toys R Us at the Somerville Circle. I don't think it's there anymore. I think it all got knocked down. But that actually, I think, had been the bowling alley beforehand. The place where the Toys R Us was at that point had been a bowling alley. And that was the bowling alley that you hear in the Great Bluff Tune here on BluffCosm.com. It's the bowling alley from the Evil Farm. So just so you know, there's a little BluffCosm tie-in there. Yeah, that's the part where the bowling alley guy goes like, boys, come on outside. Why? Because this isn't the time for you to be here. Hey, baby, want to make some movies? Yes. I won't play it for you now because on the Overnightscape, I don't play Bluff Tunes. The Overnightscape is just about talking to you and myself here. This is the second Overnightscape that I've done, and the previous one was kind of a test, so I don't know if I'm going to be broadcasting that one. This one, we'll see. This is the, we'll see if this one is worthy of...
Music for Night Driving in VR, July 2013, 10/23.
Checkered prints and a plant pot of money, we'll find it very funny. Umbrella holds open the door, thinking about the past in a melancholy way. It all went away, didn't it? But I don't miss it, I don't mind. We'll be right back.
The Rambler number 311, June 6th, 09, 13.6, 04/23.
You know, these other guys like Montel Williams and Curtis Sliwa or Governor Mike Huckabee and Laura Ingraham, like these are all people that I really, again, I don't really have anything against these people, but like I said, honestly, I felt no compulsion to even go and talk to them, you know? So, and I would have absolutely stayed away from Sean Hannity. I don't know. I mean, he's... Like I said, I just really don't have an interest in the guy. But this guy gave me that quest, and the whole point of the whole psychological thing was, hey, you're being a pussy, you don't have any self-confidence, you need to move forward. So there, I felt like I had to do it. So I tried. It was kind of awkward and weird. This guy, I think that guy Mark Levin, who's also a talk show host, was there, and some other guy was there. And I listened back to the tape. I think I actually introduced myself. I had like, hey, you know, yeah, I'm recording my show. This is The Rambler. You know, we were invited here by Michael Harrison. It's more of like the podcasting side. I mean, I started off, I thought, kind of introducing what was going on. And I don't think it was so out of line to be recording there. I mean, what was the exact wording? But then, like, they all, like, ran away from me and were like, you know, this is a party. Come on. Please. You know, like, very dismissively. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's a party. Oh, okay. You know? But that was really the extent of the incident, you know. And I really didn't know, but I just Googled Sean Hannity today. And, wow, this guy is, like, involved in some stuff that's really weird, because all my years of listening to conservative talk radio, and this was many, many years ago, you know, primarily Bob Grant here in New York City, who did not gain international or even world nationwide fame, but he's one of the best. He wasn't there. I wish he was there. Bob Grant, and then also, of course, Rush Limbaugh. They always had a conservative perspective, a lot of humor, and also the points they were making were logical, were rational. I now understand that they were participating either wittingly or unwittingly in a dialectical trap to neutralize the power of the people, if you want to put it that way. But their arguments and logic were sound. I don't ever remember hearing Rush Limbaugh ever say anything and thinking, like, that doesn't make any sense. But the first hit I got for Sean Hannity... What today? This is just like, well, it was like June 4th, whatever, so it was a couple days ago. Was he goes on his show and says, Obama is saying, he said, this is not a Christian nation, this is a Muslim nation. They showed on this one blog, I guess that liberal blog, Daily Cause, like over and over again, this is not a liberal nation, it's a conservative nation, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Or this is not a, this is a Muslim nation. So. You see the actual clips from Obama, and you know, I feel very much like, you know, my view on Obama.
Quakeversal Satellite News Fail, November 10th, 13, 12, 18th.
UBKGUH, UPKGA, and is probably some sort of Islamic prayer type of thing. There is a lot of that pops up there as well. Let's see. H.H. Kavichandra Swami. Yep, I'm telling you, there you get all kinds of religion. And, yep, talking about Krishna. Just the Donks, who is my on again, off again friend. He appeared on some of the episodes of the series before this. He actually joined and lived with the Hare Krishna people for a while. If and when we're back associating with him, we can have him tell that story sometime. Let's see, podcast versus player episode. Yeah, a lot of game and comic podcasts popping up today. Let's see. This is the episode 8, Super Person Fight Club. And yeah, attribution, no derivative works, a little over an hour long. And yeah, our character fight that has no name. That could be interesting. Again, I'm not going to excerpt that now because I think it's time to shift gears again. We got some story stuff. Oh, yeah, it's time to set back the clock and be nice story listening kids.
Chapter 5 of Queer Little Folks. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Jennifer Dore. Queer Little Folks by Harriet Beecher Stowe. Mother Magpie's Mischief. Old Mother Magpie was about the busiest character in the forest. But you must know that there is a great difference between being busy and being industrious. One may be very busy all the time, and yet not in the least industrious. And this was the case with Mother Magpie. She was always full of everybody's business but her own. Up and down, here and there, everywhere but in her own nest. Knowing everyone's affairs. Telling what everybody had been doing or ought to do. And ready to cast her advice, gratis, at every bird and beast of the woods. Now she bustled up to the parsonage at the top of the oak tree, to tell old Parson Too-Wit what she thought he ought to preach for his next sermon, and how dreadful the morals of the parish were becoming. Then, having perfectly bewildered the poor old gentleman, who was always sleepy of a Monday morning, Mother Magpie would take a peep into Mrs. Oriole's nest, sit chattering on a bough above, and pour forth floods of advice, which poor little Mrs. Oriole used to say to her husband bewildered her more than a hard northeast storm. "Depend upon it, my dear," Mother Magpie would say, "that this way of building your nest..."
Overnightscape Central Presidents, February 16th, 15, 25, 26.
Died the following day. He was only 57. President Grover Cleveland, notable for a bunch of things that you probably already know. His secret cancer operation, that he was president twice before and after Benjamin Harrison. But the one notable thing that I didn't know that I found out was later after in his retirement, he wrote an article in the Ladies' Home Journal weighing in on women's suffrage, and he said, quote, "Sensible and responsible women do not want to vote. The relative positions to be assumed by men and women in the working out of our civilization were assigned long ago by a higher intelligence." Thank you very much, Grover Cleveland. Moving right along. Benjamin Harrison was sworn into office in 1889. He was the second shortest president, 5'6", but he was much heavier than James Madison, who was like a little teeny tiny guy. And he was the fourth and last president to sport a full beard. And he was the earliest president whose voice was preserved. That's right. Frank played just some quotes of some presidents, but here is just, it's only a few seconds, but here is Benjamin Harrison, a little after, before he died, a little after his presidency.
In Washington, D.C. That with God's help, our two countries shall continue to live side by side in peace and prosperity. Benjamin Harrison.
Crickly crackly. But it's there's your time machine effect, so to speak. And 1889 is a long time ago. And see, he died in 1893. Did he? That doesn't make any sense. Anyhow,
Harrison also was the first president to have electricity in the White House, and he and his wife would not touch the light switches for fear of electrocution, hence would sometimes go to sleep with the lights on. And those are your golden presidents, or what I like to think. I mean, then you go into McKinley, and he was shot by an anarchist, and you got your Teddy Roosevelt, and your William Howard Taft, and your Woodrow Wilson in World War One, and Will Arden. Man, I can just about. There are a couple.
The Rambler number 29, August 29th, 08, 07/43.
Got our free ticket here? Yeah, I got a free ticket. Now we go in. Is it legal to record? We'll see. Oh, there's a film of Salvador Dali upside down. Nice. Take the elevator up to the top floor and work my way down. That's my concept. And while I'm waiting for the elevator, looking out at the sculpture garden. Beautiful. Hopefully it'll stop raining by the time I get out of this place, because I don't have an umbrella. This work of art is by Grayson Perry, Map of an Englishman, an etching from 2004. It's like a map. It's like sex, romance, tender. It's like someone's brain, but like as an island. That's kind of good. I like that one. How much? I'll buy it. See, that's the one thing they never do here at the Museum of Modern Art. They don't put the prices on. I would love to see the prices. That would make me like know which one is worth more. And then you had things like Persistence of Vision. The Melting Clock's probably worth like, I don't know, $40 million. Or The Starry Night by Van Gogh. Like $500 million. This freaking elevator, come on. I think what people do is they get like on the MP3, like the iPod, they get like tours and stuff, so it shouldn't be too weird for me to be holding this around, you know, around here. Hopefully not. Enter elevator.
Right now you're going to fifth or fourth?
Fifth.
Oh, okay.
Second.